You can put the presentation on the thing, and I'll just say next slide when it's time for next slide. Just a little background. If you recall, I think it was Dana and Phil Rule, during our discussions of herring, where we went back and forth on sectors, whether to include it, not include it, and then we developed something at the very end outside of the committee, and it was finally I think it was Dana and Phil said, you know, we need to get smart on sectors and let's discuss sectors. So I put together this brief presentation so the council can look at sectors in a little more detail. We are experiencing some growth in some of our stocks. Some of them are at very low levels, however. Overfishing is still occurring in some. And rebuilding plans, especially in groundfish beginning 2009, may result in additional restrictions. Our successes are fragile, many will say, because we have excess capacity in many of our fisheries. We have a bottom-up industry-funded buyback going on right now that we'll get briefed on at this council meeting. And some of our measures, like the input controls we're using, and controls may not ensure that our conservation mandates will be achieved, and safety continues to be a concern as a background. I believe sectors can improve safety. They can address excess capacity problems without legislation. They can address fairness and equity in better ways, and they can improve conservation efforts. Next slide. Fishery conservation and management is about to evolve to include ecosystem-based fishery management practices, and that's a holistic approach at the fishery looking at trade-offs. And basically, those trade-offs are what we've just done in herring for haddock, where, you know, we've given a certain allocation of haddock to the herring fishery. We give certain allocations of yellowtail to the scallop fishery, and I think you'll find as we evolve into the ecosystem approach, we'll have to really integrate all our plans to give to allocate quota from one plan to another in a holistic approach. Current administration is promoting share-based programs. I think in the 2007 budget, there will be some funding to assist in the councils in the development of share-based programs, dedicated access privilege programs. And the administration goal is to double the number of programs using dedicated access privileges, IFQs, by 2010. We have started allocating quota, as I mentioned, in a number of our programs. Yellowtail special access program with yellowtail, special access programs with cod as bycatch, Cape Cod hook sector is an allocation program. U.S.-Canada sharing of cod is sharing between or allocation between two countries. We have the haddock allocations in the herring plan we just approved. Whiting fisheries, as we develop our whiting plan, we may be looking at assigning certain bycatch quota to the whiting fishery. We approved the Cape Cod gillnet sector. And as you all know, Amendment 13 allows for self-defining sectors. The first plan to do that. Our herring plan does not. It's on hold. Our present up-in-the-air policy seems to be when the tide comes in, we all go up. When the tide goes out, we all go down. And sector allocation and individual quotas and things like that is actually the opposite of the one-size-fits-all. Remind the council that next slide that the council developed and approved a conservation and management policy not too long ago, and that policy talks about allocation and using effective management measures. Next slide. Self-selecting sectors were adopted in Amendment 13. Membership is voluntary. It does employ hard tax. It's limited to 20% of the target tag for species. The applicant must submit a draft environmental assessment. The council must approve a sector, and NIMS implements the sector. And sectors, as I said, were not adopted in the recent amendment, Herring Amendment, pending further development. Now, what are the advantages of sectors? Sectors control catch and waste to fit their members' practices patterns. That's quite evident with the Cape Cod hook sector. You can have no trip limits, higher trip limits. You can be exempt from seasonal closures. Many of the input controls you can be exempt from in a sector and just rely on a hard quota. If the sector tack is not exceeded, some protection that future measures will not further restrict catch. So, in other words, there is some assurance that if it can be demonstrated that the Cape Cod hook sector stayed within their cod allocation and the cod mortality goes down, they may stay at the same quota. So that's an advantage by creating a sector and not going over your quota. An advantage of a sector provides opportunity for communities to preserve their access to groundfish. I think if you've listened to the Cape Cod hook sector talk about their groundfish sector, they believe that's actually saved their fishery and saved their community by creating a sector. Otherwise, they would be have gone by the wayside, similar to a lot of, you know, smaller gillnet fisheries off the coast of Maine and New Hampshire have gone by the wayside. An advantage of a sector is enhanced safety. Again, without input controls, closed seasons, and trip limits and things like that, you can pretty much write a better business plan and rely on good weather to catch a quota as opposed to input control. So there's some enhanced safety. And it also is a solution to overcapacity problems where the council wouldn't have to get involved in the capacity, nor would the government. You create a sector, and then the sector in itself would manage the capacity. It would aggregate all the catch, and they could choose to have, you know, maybe 40 vessels aggregate their catch, and maybe only 20 of them would fish. The whole idea of the sector would be they'd manage their own quota and determine who fishes and who doesn't. Some other advantages of a sector, it minimizes bycatch. Better business planning, flexibility, timing, and opportunities for the sector and the fishermen to create a better business plan. Better accountability, enhanced stewardship, fairness issues better resolved one time. In other words, every time when you employ a one-size-fits-all type category, strategy for management, then every time there's a reduction, you go through the arguments about, you know, is it my sector that's causing the problem? Is it the recreational fishermen? Is it the party and charter boat? Is it the gillnetters? And you have these arguments every time there's a management measure about who's going to get hit the hardest or who should get hit the hardest. But if you have an allocation of quota and a dedicated access privilege, you do it once, and you determine that percentage once. I'd argue that an advantage of a sector allocation is that it is a more effective management tool. Now, what are the disadvantages of sectors? Well, a sector formation is very complex and time-consuming. I think if you, again, I talked to John, and I've heard him speak about his sector. It took an awful lot of time to get buy-in and to work with fishermen and convince them that it was a good idea. So it's complex and time-consuming to create a sector. Requires a well-developed organization and adequate funding to support. I think the Cape Cod Hook Association was up and running, had a charter, and it was very it was easier for them to create a sector than it would be for an organization to start from scratch. They had already gone through the growing pains of being organized. It's difficult to form if landing's history is low or does not exist. Very difficult to form a sector if you don't have landings or landings are very low. Depending on your perspective, may lead to some consolidation. Again, if you're opposed to consolidation, you may look at a sector as a bad thing. If you think that consolidation and reducing capacity is a good thing, then it would be an advantage. In a sector, one bad apple spoils the bunch, requires self-enforcement, a disadvantage. And a disadvantaged landing history is complicated by continued dependence on input controls, which may disproportionately reduce catch among permit holders. In talking to a lot of fishermen and talking about sectors, they don't feel they're primarily concerned that they don't think they'll get a fair shot at the initial allocation, especially where over the last decade there's been so many closed areas that had prohibited especially the inshore fishermen from catching cod or other valuable stocks. So it's be very difficult to get a fair allocation given the closed areas and input controls and reduced days at sea that have been used. What are some of the issues that need to be clarified? I think when the PDT and the committee first talked about sectors, it was talked about having a tack for every species, a hard tack for every species. What we ended up with after implementation was a hard tack for one species and the rest on days at sea. So although we have a sector allocation, it doesn't work like other sectors or other co-ops or other dedicated access privileges in Alaska or the West Coast because it's a hybrid. It deals with a hard allocation of quota, but also deals in days at sea for the other 18 stocks. So there are consequences to that. I don't know what they are, but they certainly should be looked at as developing a policy, for sectors. What is the fishing mortality? How is fishing mortality apportioned between sector and non-sector participants if neither group operates within their harvesting limits? There is some mention in Amendment 13 that if the hook sector stays within their allocation and everyone else goes above the allocation, the target allocation, that they would not be penalized. But what about fishing mortality? What if the hook sector, for instance, it's determined that their F is higher than the F rebuild, and so is the other participants in the ground fish fishery. That really is not spelled out very well. Additional conservation and allocation policy development needed to ensure allocations fair. I think what we did with the I think it was a haddock sap in closed area one, is there was a motion that said, okay, the participants, I don't even know if it was just the Cape Cod hook. It might have been the whole participants in the whole sap. But we said any catch in that sap would not be considered history. Well, that's making a small piece of policy on something that should be considered very broadly because we have any number of saps. And what do you do with the history of boats caught in U.S. Canada and any of the other saps we have on B days? We never really addressed it. So history is critical to dedicated access privileges. So before we start going too far down the road of dedicated access privileges, we ought to have a policy on history, a pretty all-encompassing policy on history. And I think that what we're seeing as an issue is the transition with hybrid systems. The system now in place for Cape Cod hook, where they're on quota and on days at sea, this hybrid system is very difficult to get out of. And, I'm sure they'd like to have a quota for additional species, but it's very difficult to leave this hybrid system. So what is my recommendation, given that we have advantages and disadvantages of sectors, and we still have some issues to look at, is that we've got an awful lot of priorities to consider in 2007, but this should be one of them, is to develop an ad hoc group, maybe chairs of some of the species committees, and look in great detail and assign a staff person to developing a sector policy and especially looking at history. And whether or not it is in the best interest or it is cost beneficial or a great advantage to have this hybrid system of quota and days at sea, what are the cost benefits of sectors in general? So that's my recommendation, that we look at it as part of the 2007 priorities to develop an overall detailed council policy on sectors, because it does apply, as you'll see, to, you know, it applied to herring. We'll probably look at it in whiting, have it in groundfish. I'm not sure, but Tom Hill might address it. There's probably going to be sectors in the scallop plan, Tom, eventually. Are you talking about it? But it's going to, you know, there's opportunity for sectors now to be raised in all our management plan.
Okay, questions to Paul? Jim?
Thank you. Oh, sorry. Thank you. I have a question, and probably the slide that the self-selecting sectors slide back from page 3 sets out kind of the parameters for selecting, for developing sectors. And in our, as I recall in our discussion, I think it was back when we were talking about the gillnet sector issues. And it, as I understood it, that was the last opportunity at that meeting to form a sector before 2009, when another amendment would come in place. And I would like to have somebody explain, you know, what the timing issues are. Could somebody, for example, right now start developing a sector in the groundfish and get it approved, you know, in the due course of business over the next few years? Or is there some requirement that it happen only on certain occasions? Thanks.
If I recall that discussion, it was because we were taking a year off from groundfish. We weren't going to have the committee meet. And, you know, so I would say that any time someone petitions the council or committee or the council to develop a sector, they've got to work very closely with the committee. And so if the committee is not, you know, it's got to be approved that that's one of the actions for the committee to look at and work with the group that's forming a sector. And it gets, you know, I don't know if we do it during priorities, but the reason why it was the last opportunity for the Cape Cod gillnet sector was because the groundfish committee wasn't going to meet any longer to consider any management, let alone sectors.
So, gentlemen, Jim, roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got some questions about the sector issue, Paul, and I can see some benefits and challenges, both disadvantages, advantages, any way you want to put it. But what I don't see anywhere, I recognize that each sector, that the few sectors that are out there have established percentages of the TACs. But where is the over, is there going to be a cap of how many, what the percentage, total percentage of any species TAC could be allocated to sectors? Is there going to be a discussion of we may end up with 50% of this species that may be sectors, 70, 100, you know, and then what do you do about the bycatch issues associated with that species in other fisheries? So, I mean, that my questions about policy relate more to those kind of issues, Paul, and this is a bigger deal for Mid-Atlantic when we've got hard TACs. Sectors are very appealing in certain fisheries for us down there. If we were to do exactly what you suggested, and that is develop a policy on history, because we're dangling by a real fine piece of twine right now that's chafing quick as far as history in a mackerel fishery or Elex fisheries, which has already got a moratorium. Mackerel fishery is a better example. Because of ramped up shoreside capacities, traditional historical boats in that fishery are going to be left out once you reach a TAC, simply because of the carrying capacity of new entrants in the fishery. So to me, a way around that is a form of sector for the historical small boats. But I still would want answers to questions on issues like what is going to be the cap? I mean, in the halibut fishery in the North Pacific, for example, there's a bycatch allocation for different gear types. Then the majority of the directed fishery is, in fact, totally allocated. And I don't know if you were thinking about something like that as you made the discussions. It would be real interesting, both councils, because we both have boats in both fisheries. We've got Mid-Atlantic boats in your fisheries and New England boats and Mid-Atlantic fisheries. So those kind of issues, Mr. Chairman, are more of the concerns that I would like to see addressed during these policy discussions. Thank you very much.
George?
I think the questions that Jim just raised are some very good ones, and maybe it would be a good idea for the Mid-Atlantic Council to consider putting together a similar committee to consider the kinds of policies it might want to establish, or maybe even have some intercommunication between the two committees so that you can share ideas, get ahead of the game before the Mid-Atlantic's actually faced with having to consider whether or not to do a particular sector.
I'll bring it up at the meeting next week, George.
Sally?
I'm just wondering about the recommendation that Paul made to have the committee address sector policy. When we get to the discussion on scallops, the scallop general category advisory panel made the recommendation that individual allocation be considered as the priority means of allocation in through Amendment 11 for the general category scallop fishery, and in addition to consideration of sectors or harvesting cooperatives. So I'm just wondering if keeping the focus or the recommendation for the focus of this committee next year just on sectors was more based on limitations of the council in terms of money available for meetings, or because it seems like having a broader discussion about dedicated access privileges is appropriate given the increased level of interest on the council and coming from industry from different fisheries in a broader consideration of the subject.
Well, I'll be a little bit cynical here, that if the Magnuson Act goes through and requires a two-thirds referendum, I would like to see the referendum before we wasted any time. Do you see what I'm saying? We have a limited amount of resources and time, and right now our hands are being tied by future legislation that requires a two-thirds referendum. And so I think the current problem is sectors. I think that we have them in place. There are some issues that need to be thought out. I think that it is a dedicated access privilege, just like an individual fishing quota or individual transferable quota. It's in that same category. But, I just think if we throw the whole thing into one dedicated access privilege policy, it might be biting off more than we can chew, especially where, Congress in this area, as being petitioned by constituents, is making it extremely difficult to move forward with IFQs. Probably, I would say it's going to be impossible if the Magnuson goes through.
Well, maybe as a compromise, you could constitute the committee as something like, I guess we don't use DAPs anymore. We're supposed to use LAPPs, Limited Access Privilege Programs, which would be broader, and depending on what comes out of the Magnuson Act reauthorization, it may be that you decide it's not worth expending a lot of resources on initially to look at ITQs, but something like the red crab fishery, where there might be something other than a sector that's still an LAPP, you might want to talk about. So you could at least constitute it so that it's prepared to deal with broader issues.
Thank you, Frank. I guess first, that have a notion to propose a joint New England Mid-Atlantic Sector Committee, that ought to just be interesting. But to Paul's recommendation at the end, the points Jimmy brought up before, the same ones I brought up in Portland, that, we need to have my broader policy is where we're going. Part of that is how much of it do you give to one group or this group or that group, and where's it stop and where's it start, and all of them discussions. So with that in mind, I have to go along with Paul's
recommendation that we probably need to have a committee to get down to the nuts and bolts of this. We can sit here and kick it around all we want, but we really need to get down to, if we want to look at this realistically, we need to get down to the nuts and bolts of it to see whether this is how we want to do it or if this is the way to go. So I would endorse forming a committee, I guess.
Get back to Sally's point is that initially the Magnuson reauthorization language was about all LAPPs having the two-thirds vote in New England. But we were successful in the region to get the language changed to IFQs. So harvesting co-ops, sectors, things of that nature can be, according to the legislation now, can be implemented without two-thirds majority. But anything dealing with an individual fishing quota, like what might be an alternative in scallops, upon passage of the one version or a couple of them of the reauthorization, would need a two-thirds. So I'd rather start with talking about sectors and harvesting co-ops and things that aren't IFQs, and then work into that if we can.
Dana?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wholeheartedly support Paul's recommendation to form a committee to set priorities. I think it's absolutely matter of equity. We've got sectors started now, and there are a lot of pros and cons involved with the whole process. But quite frankly, we should have had this policy set before we ever got started with sectors. So the sooner the better. I wholeheartedly support it. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. Well, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think probably over the course of discussions in the last year, some may think I'm against sectors, but I'm not. And I have been against the haphazard enabling of sectors without thinking about some of these very issues that Paul has raised. And I think we should get on with a comprehensive look at the sector phenomenon and settle some of these issues. And I also wonder if it might not be possible, as we do that, to consider that, for example, in groundfish, if somebody now were to want to start a sector and they can't because it hasn't been scheduled for a few years, why couldn't it be the sector committee that deals with at least the preliminary look at the sector and then bring in the particular expertise of the fishery that happens to be in question, for example, scallops or groundfish, and because really the issues of sectors are somewhat similar and they're independent of the fishery itself. I mean, once you've established settled these issues, the sector phenomenon is really not too directly related to the species. There are obviously species considerations to take in account. For example, groundfish would have a lot different bycatch problems than scallops might. But it seems as though this we might want to look at this recommendation to include a kind of a sector reviewing program as well, or a preliminary reviewing, and then sort of rethinking our way, our idea of how one would apply for a sector and how one would accomplish it. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Paul?
We have the council members have to know and be clear that it takes a council action to implement a sector. So you have to have an ongoing management action, the council process, how it impacts our other management. And if we don't have a planned action in 2007, it's hard to change groundfish management by incorporating another sector. It's almost impossible. So you got to think about those things. And if the public is thinking about establishing a sector, they've got to get in a priority setting to make sure we can implement it for them in November.
Jim?
I recognize, thank you, Mr. Chairman, I recognize that it's a council action, but what about the issue of whether or not a species can have a sector? Does that have to come through an amendment, or can you, just for poops and giggles, just say that we come up with a decent policy for sectors? Would you do an omnibus amendment that covers all species that don't have it and allow for it, or would you have to take species by species and have it included in an amendment? That's the concern that I've got. We've got four or five amendments coming down the track. If this is something that we'd like to consider, it either needs to be rolled into one of those actions, or you're going to have to provide a mechanism to establish it, because I think it's beyond a framework. So that might be something that you want to answer to, too.
George?
Yeah, the way it's set up right now, it's basically a three-step process. One is to amend the individual FMP, or it could be done as an omnibus, just as when was done in Amendment 13 for groundfish, that establishes the authority to do a sector if and when one comes forward. The second step is actually to have a sector be proposed with the details of it. In the case of Cape Cod Hook, that was done in Amendment 13, but it can be done after the fact once you have the authority. And the third step of that is when the sector actually comes in with an operations plan for a given year. That has to be approved. So what you'd want to do is either do an omnibus or an individual FMP amendment to set up the authority to do sectors if and when you want to do it.
All right. Okay, so one thing to keep in mind is committees are usually formed in September, and it's going to be November before you set priorities. So just keep in mind as you move into the fall, whatever that may be. Tom?
I don't know whether this is the appropriate time to talk about it, but I just thinking I was looking at the agenda for Wednesday about groundfish, and it strikes me that in tying together the discussion during the report section about the implications of doing our mid-term adjustment for groundfish in 2008-2009, it seems to me that if there is any interest in looking at the way that we're approaching groundfish, we might be thinking about it now versus in November or December or January of next year. The reality of that midterm correction, if there is any, is that if we're using the current matrix of measures that are available to us, the information from the GARM will come and will have less than a couple of months in order to be able to figure out what kind of measures we're going to implement. And just thinking about down the road why there is no, I think it's 2008, Paul? This is the issue of the information coming from the GARM for the mid-term, mid-Amendment 13 correction, why that information is going to become available. And you're going to have to implement something. You're going to have all of the measures set to be able to implement it in less than a couple of months, because the timing of the GARM and the timing of the requirement for the measures to be in place is a very tiny window. And so in thinking about this strategic thinking that is being talked about for sectors, it seems to me there is an equally important set of strategic thinking that needs to go on as to whether we're going to embark on looking at groundfish management the way that we approach it. I think it's accurate to say that nobody I've talked to thinks that the current complexities and difficulties in the management system that we have is sustainable over the long term. At least that's the impression I get. So I guess my question would be, if we're going to develop a new approach to groundfish, why we would need to start doing that sooner than later. Because if you wait until we get close to getting the information from the GARM, you'll never have enough time to do it. In fact, we will barely have enough time to be able to figure out what measures might be tied to any changes in fishing mortality in the fishery the way that it was discussed. And I don't know where that fits in this discussion, but it seems to me Brownfish is orientated towards a very narrow issue of one sector, I think this is a much bigger issue with our thinking about long-term planning for groundfish that doesn't seem to be on the immediate horizon here, and I would encourage us to figure that out because the time between now and when that GARM is going to be done is a relatively short time in comparison to how long it usually takes us to do an amendment.
Anybody else? Sectors. Okay. Moving along here. Dave, are you ready to move into research daring, or do you need a... Oh, hang on. Paul?
Just to... I didn't know you were going to go to research daring. I was just going to give the council a little more to think about. I already wrote down the five things we can do for 2008. Scallops will be doing general category and also doing the days at sea. For 2007 priorities, scallops will be completing general category and doing days at sea for 2008 and 9, or splitting the quota for 2008 and 9. So scallops is a must. Whiting, we started the amendment. We'll continue the amendment in 2007. Groundfish, will probably start that action to do an amendment because, first of all, we got a suit that we need an EIS. We probably do need an EIS, so we probably say, ought to say in September, let's do an EIS, which means starting groundfish right away. And habitat will continue. And then if you add sectors, those are the five things we can do next year. So just think about that as we think about priorities. They're pretty much already, you know, pretty close to being set already.
Okay. Dave, can you go ahead or need time?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. People want to turn